We already talked about the significance of today's date. April 22nd is Earth Day. This year, it is also the first night of Passover at sundown. Jewish families around the world will gather for the traditional Seder, the Passover meal. And we're going to hear some ideas about what to put on the table tonight or any night or morning or afternoon, for that matter. Our next guest wrote a book called The New Mediterranean Jewish Table. Joyce Goldstein is cooking teacher, cookbook author, restaurant consultant, and former restaurant owner of Square One in San Francisco. And our guest in the exchange, Joyce, thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here, Jeff.
You disabuse us early in the book of the notion that matzah and gefilte fish are central to Jewish cuisine. This is a good move, I think.
Well, not meaning to put a slur on it, but I think most people in this country, when you say Jewish food, they immediately go to brisket, matzah, latkes, and all of this Eastern European cooking, because most of the Jews that came to this country were from Eastern Europe. However, for generations, there have been Jews living all over the Mediterranean, eating a more varied and healthy and delicious diet. And I think it's time for American Jews to sort of make a turn and go to the sunlight of the Mediterranean and leave that cold weather food behind.
So a little lighter stuff, I'm thinking. Maybe
lighter, healthier, lots of vegetables, mm-hmm. grains, legumes, fruits. I mean, if you're in Eastern Europe, you know, seasonality doesn't matter. It's meat and potatoes and a few root vegetables and an apple. But if you're in the Mediterranean, you're keyed into the seasons and what's fresh and all the vegetables and fruits as they cycle in. And I think it makes it a lot more interesting.
So ingredients different, certainly. How about cooking methods? Are those different as well?
I think methods are fairly similar. I mean, this is mostly home food. It's not restaurant food. You don't need dehydrators and circulators or anything. You can cook it at home. In the Mediterranean, I think a lot of people didn't always have ovens in the beginning, and they brought some of their dishes to the village baker, dropped it off, and would pick it up later. But they all had burners, and a lot of things were cooked, you know, stovetop cooking, easy to prepare.
How much cross-pollination with the dominant cultures for Mediterranean Jews in places like Portugal? Was there a lot of sharing of dishes and ideas for things to prepare?
Well, I think the Sephardic, Maghrebi, and Mizrahi cultures, and I want to tell you what those are before I go into it.
Okay.
The Sephardic Jews were the Jews in Spain and Portugal who had to leave the country after the Inquisition, and they ended up in Greece and Turkey and few in Italy. But there were always Jews in North Africa, the Maghrebi Jews in Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, and Libya. And there were Jews in Muslim countries since biblical times, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, and Iran. So all of them were pretty integrated into their communities. And they would go to the market and find out what people were cooking and exchange recipe ideas. Because I'm a believer that geography is destiny. Where you grow up, what's cultivated and raised there, and what your neighbors are cooking will certainly affect what you cook. The only difference for Jews is that you have to stay within the kosher laws. You're not cooking pork, you're not cooking shellfish, and you're not using any dairy with meat. Those are your only requirements, but anything else can be just like what your neighbors are cooking.
You take pride, Joyce, in what you call old world food in a new world kitchen. What's your general approach to changing or updating what you find at the beginning?
Well, in years past, women did not go to work. They were home all day. Being efficient really didn't matter. You know, you just cooked all day long. For us, time is of the essence. And when I was reading a lot of these older recipes, I'd find something in paragraph 3 that really should have been in paragraph 1 or even done the day before. So I reorganized some of the recipes. And also, I intensified the flavors in some of the dishes. Spices in the Mediterranean are a lot more intense than our tired jars of spices that have been sitting in the storage room of the supermarket for God knows how long. So sometimes I double the amount of spice, or I added some lemon zest or lemon juice to brighten it, or added a pinch of heat. Americans have a very eclectic palate. You know, one night we eat Mexican, the next night Thai, the next night Chinese. And so we need slightly stronger flavors than, except for North Africa, where everything is pretty intense. But otherwise, I sort of brighten things up.
I take the full blame for the entire jars of spices in my kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, people don't know to buy the smallest amount, and after they've stopped smelling, to dump them, you know.
Ah, that's I was going to ask you what the key was. When they stop smelling fragrant, that's the time to get rid of them?
Yep, absolutely.
Joyce Goldstein is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is The New Mediterranean Jewish Table. If you have some questions, comments, or stories about Jewish cooking you'd like to share, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Joyce, can you give us a short list of ingredients to cook like this that might not be in our kitchens already?
Well, I don't know what you have in your kitchen, but I know that if you go online, you can find anything. Certain brands of tahini, like I like Al-Wadi from Lebanon, you can get it at Amazon. Cortez rose water and orange flower water, sumac, any of these spices and grains are available online, and many of them are at our markets now. I mean, I shop at a normal supermarket, and they have pomegranate molasses, and they have all kinds of lentils and dried beans and grains from Bob Red Mill. I mean, there's not a thing you really can't get these days.
Pomegranate molasses, that sounds really intriguing.
Well, it's sweet and sour, and it's used a lot in Persian cooking. There's a wonderful dish that you could be making for the Seder tonight, a chicken with walnuts and pomegranate called fesenjan. And also pomegranate molasses can be used in marinades, like if you want to grill a chicken breast. It'll add a nice caramelization. It's a wonderful ingredient to have in your pantry.
Any particular skills we need to cultivate to follow the recipes in your book?
You have to be able to read. How is that?
I like those easy skills in the kitchen.
Well, no, you know, most people don't really read. Even teaching generations of cooking students, they get going, and before you know it, they've done something where if they'd read to the end of the recipe, they wouldn't have had to throw it out and start all over. So I say this seriously, read the recipe, and if you have to, read it to yourself out loud so that you don't discard something that you need when you should have set it aside. Reading is a basic skill, and I think a lot of us just think, oh, and it doesn't apply to me, I can just sort of zip along here.
I was just thinking, there always seems every recipe has the set this aside, you'll need it again later, and that's the stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't do that. Once when I was teaching up at the Culinary Institute, we were doing something with roasted eggplant, and I said specifically, if it has large pockets of seeds, discard them. So when I got to the kitchen, they had not, and they had mixed them in with the eggplant, and I had to put the whole thing in the garbage and start all over. So important to read the recipe and understand what you're looking for.
Okay, all the way to the end. Okay, there's a good example of merging cultures in here in the first segment where you're dealing with salads and dishes like that. Rice stuffed vine leaves. When in a meal is this served, or can it be the main part of a meal?
Well, it can be a main part of the meal, but traditionally it's part of the mezza or, you know, antipasto segment of the meal. It's basically stuffed grape leaves, and you can make them days ahead of time. And you just serve them either with a little yogurt or some squeeze of lemon. There are also grape leaves that are stuffed with meat and rice, and those are traditionally served warm or hot with an egg and lemon sauce and are perfectly delicious. But either way, you'll be happy.
There are lentils all over the book. And these are things you're, I don't know, you're not likely to find these in Middle Eastern Jewish recipes or at least Eastern European Jewish recipes?
They don't use lentils in Eastern European. They don't know from a lentil or a legume, as a matter of fact. But lentil salads are used all over the Mediterranean, and there's a particularly delicious one in here with carrots and dates and a wonderful citrus vinaigrette that I recommend highly.
There is some great stuff in here. There's a lot of eggplant in here, I notice, and much of it roasted. And I don't know, I haven't worked with eggplant that much, but it seems like it's easy to do wrong. You have some tips on roasting eggplant?
Yes, I do. First of all, I have tips on cooking eggplant. Most people don't cook eggplant long enough, so then they complain that it's bitter. So if you are frying or grilling eggplant, it has to be cooked all the way through. When you brush it with olive oil, when it's completely cooked, it's translucent. There are no white spots of opaque. If you're roasting them, you can do them directly on the flame on the stove. You can do them under the broiler. You can do them in the oven. And you just have to turn them a few times so that they become uniformly soft all the way through. But the key with eggplant is to cook it completely.
Okay. I noticed there's a recipe in here for artichokes braised in citrus juices, which sounds fascinating. Let's hear about that.
Well, it's a Sicilian recipe, although there's also an Algerian recipe in the book that cooks it with orange and lemon. But this one uses tangerines, orange, lemon, all of the citrus juices to braise them. And then after the artichokes are cooked, some capers and a little bit of anchovy are added. And it's used as an antipasto dish or as a room temperature salad. Because, you know, very often in the Jewish home, you're not allowed to cook on the Sabbath. And so this is a dish that could be made on Friday and eaten for Saturday lunch.
All right. We're talking to Joyce Goldstein here on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. We already talked about how she's reorganized some things. You're welcome to join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Visit about the cooking we're talking about. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. There's a whole section on savory pastries, and it seems to be more than a part of the meal, but an important cultural component of socializing.
It is. It's a symbol of hospitality. They are, many of them, labor-intensive. And in the old days, women would sit around one table with a cup of tea and fold these pastries, stuff them and fold them. It's sort of a lonely activity to do by yourself if you're doing it in any quantity. You can do a small batch, certainly. But this is the sort of thing where I involve my family. I ask my daughter-in-law, my granddaughter, and we sit around the table and stuff them, just like in Italy when you'd be making tortellini. You can't make a million tortellini by yourself. You'll go nuts. So it's nice to have a helpmate. But they're particularly delicious, and they're also economical, because if you have little bits of things left over, some chicken or some cooked fish or something, you can turn them into a delicious filling for a pastry, a burek.
There's a lot of cheese in this particular section, too. So what kind of cheese tends to be Mediterranean?
Well, you'd be using feta, kasseri cheese, certain kinds of ricotta cheeses. Tends to be sheep cheese or cow cheese, but a lot of sheep cheese, which have a very distinctive personality, certain amount of sharpness that you can then temper with vegetables or herbs. Okay. But they hold up well in pastries, because once you put the dough on something, the filling dies down. So you want your filling to be particularly intense, so that when all that bready stuff goes around it, you can still taste it.
I remember a chat with a rabbi years ago who explained the significance of matzah to Passover, that you're really intervening. It's like God intervening in the lives of the Jews. You're intervening in the process with the matzah. It sounds like with some of these pastry recipes, there's a lot of intervention.
Well, at least there are a little bit more fun to eat than matzah. I have to tell you, matzah is a pretty bland, crackery thing, no matter how well prepared it is. But there are in the book some wonderful matzah recipes for the week of Passover, where you soak the matzah briefly and treat it like lasagna, where you layer it with cheese or with a meat filling and bake it and then cut it into squares and serve it. And I think that's a nice change of pace for matzah.
Soak it in what? I'm curious.
Water, usually, just to soften it a little bit. Uh-huh. In the old days, matzahs were thicker and round, and ours are, you know, so thin and so delicate. So the old recipes will say soak for 5 minutes. Well, you can't soak ours for 5 minutes. You'd be throwing it away. So a minute, just to soften it so that it's flexible enough to put in a baking dish, put some filling, soak another matzah, put it on top, and layer it. And then you have a very lovely lasagna-like dish.
Wow, that does sound fun. Let's talk some main courses here. What are some of the biggies that people need to be aware of?
Well, like tonight is the first Seder. So a lot of people will do, Ashkenazi Jews will do brisket, but Mediterranean Jews might do chicken with apricots or chicken with orange, lemon, and ginger. They might do lamb with raisins and almonds from Morocco. My family likes the lamb with green garlic stew from Turkey, which is something I've prepared for the last 3 years. That's a big hit here. Lamb and poultry would be more typical of the Mediterranean than something like a brisket, which is pretty heavy.
Green garlic stew. So where are you going to get garlic that's green like that?
Green garlic is at the farmers markets right now, and even in some of the supermarkets. In my normal market, they had green garlic the other day.
Okay, we have a call here from Vince and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange. We're talking to Joyce Goldstein about Mediterranean Jewish cooking.
Hi there. I just saw a really interesting DVD called The Deli Man, all about the history of Jewish deli food. Mm-hmm. And they talked about cooking with schmaltz. I think they meant something about chicken fat.
It's chicken fat, and the delis, of course, are an Eastern European tradition, not relevant to my book. But chicken fat is used in place of cooking with butter. So if you're cooking meat, you can stay with chicken fat because you can't use butter. I mean, you could use olive oil in the Mediterranean. It's not the healthiest thing to eat in quantity.
Right.
But it certainly tastes good.
Oh, I forgot about the prescription of milk and meat together. So, yeah, you couldn't cook with butter.
You couldn't cook chicken with butter, for example. You couldn't saute a chicken breast in butter. You couldn't do a dairy sauce on a meat kebab. You couldn't do one of those yogurt sauces. You'd have to go to tahini or some sort of aioli.
Okay. There's a recipe in here I can't keep my eyes off of Moroccan chicken tagine with sweet tomato jam.
Oh, that is delicious, yes. And that would be very nice tonight, too. You cook down the tomatoes with a little honey and cinnamon until it's quite thick and it clings to the chicken, and it's a very savory and delicious stew.
Served with couscous or rice, I see, yeah.
Well, you could do rice right now, yeah.
Do you use recipes that much yourself? I get the feeling that your knowledge of cooking is so encyclopedic, you could probably go into the kitchen without having to do much of anything.
Well, I'm of two minds here. When I'm just cooking for myself, I just go. I don't measure anything. But when you're writing cookbooks, you have to be a very responsible adult. You have to measure everything so that the people who cook your recipes aren't calling you up on the phone later and screaming at you. And so I do measure very, very carefully and test things a number of times. But if I'm just cooking for myself, you know, I wing it quite often. I go to the market, see what's good, come home and cook food.
Has that happened? Has anybody screamed at you for the recipes in one of your books?
Not for me. I never want that to happen. But I have worked in places where they had a cookbook and there were mistakes and people called and I had to listen to people crying on the phone. It was not fun.
No, I can imagine. It's a wonderful book with wonderful recipes, and it's been a pleasure to visit with you. Joyce Goldstein is the author of The New Mediterranean Jewish Table. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.